Radio presents the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge, raising money for comic relief. Donate now by going to my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/Geekatorium27podcast. FUBAR and Geekatorium, doing something stupid for a very good cause.
It's 9:04 a.m.
We're halfway.
We are literally halfway. That's exactly what I was thinking. So, welcome to the FUBAR Radio presents The Death of Two Men.
The slow, painful death.
I told you this was going to be the hard part of the room, when it was just going to be me and you and the early hours.
You've been saying that since about one this morning.
No, since
one. You've been saying, this is going to be the hard part.
I said.
This is going to be the hard part. Well, this is going to be the hard part.
I'll give you the hard part.
Oh, fucking hell.
Point being is, I've said the point being quite a lot tonight. That's the point being, all right? We have to, we just need to, you know...
What? Get like, through the next 14 hours?
I've just received a text. Shall I read it?
Well, only if it's airworthy.
Hello, this is Dave Pickering. I'm joining you for a slot today in your Parathon Marathon podcast marathon. I'm outside the Pleasance, but I can't figure out where FUBAR Radio is. So we're going to send one of our bods to come and get you.
Who is this guy?
Dave Pickering.
Do you know who that is?
Nope. I mean, I do. I recognise the name.
Right, shall I'll vacate the guest's seat.
And what?
We've got a guest.
No, I know that, but
we've got a guest pool.
But yeah, but that's fine.
This is good. Things are looking up. We've got our guest.
Yeah.
The drought is over. The guest drought is over.
Well,
unless this guy is really bad.
Well, no.
He's probably had more sleep than us.
He's had sleep. Let's just put that where it needs to be. We are definitely going insane. We are definitely losing our minds.
We knew this was going to happen.
It's really hard for me to talk. It really is getting to that point where...
Really?
My tongue wants out. My tongue is getting to that point where it feels fat
Can
and
I just
sloppy.
Interrupt you here for a second?
Yeah.
Update.
Oh, bus stop watch.
There's no one at the bus stop.
Mate, what a letdown.
No other buses.
What a letdown.
It's an empty stop.
An empty stop.
Bereft of people.
It is like
it stands there alone. Oh, there's someone coming, but he's not going to the bus stop. He's walking across the road.
I'm sure everyone's tuning in to find out who's going to the bus stop.
I'm just trying
on North
put
Road.
Some fucking variety in. What, everyone wants to hear you talk about how your tongue's tired. No one cares.
I care.
I care,
you
but no one
care.
Else cares.
No one cares.
Uh-oh.
David Pickering, everybody, is in the hizzy.
Hello.
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 How you doing, sir?
I'm all right, yeah. How long have you been going now?
14 hours.
14 hours. You've both been awake for 14 hours then?
I've been awake a lot longer than that,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, well... God almighty, are you comfortable? Are you happy? Can we get you anything? Coffee?
Dave, you need to put some cans on.
Put the cans on.
Yeah, I'll get some monitors going on.
Ooh, yeah, my friend. Welcome, come and sit down.
Right.
Thank you for joining us today.
Right.
Right,
yeah,
you can now have to talk for 2 hours.
We're going to bed. All
right. No. I tried to get a nap before and I laid down and I got, I think, 3 minutes of actual sleep.
Wow.
Yeah.
It wasn't worth it. It's not worth it.
Really wasn't worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, if you sleep at all, it's going to make you feel worse,
yeah.
I think.
I believe if I can get a proper half an hour nap, I should shake.
There's no point, Paul.
That's your attitude to everything in life. So, David,
yes.
For the listeners at home who may not know you and your works, explain yourself, defend who you are.
Okay, so I am Dave Pickering and I make a podcast called Getting Bear Acquainted, and I also make another podcast called Stand Up Tragedy, which is also a live show. Getting Bear Acquainted is a conversation podcast where I talk to people who I know about themselves.
Okay.
And Stand Up Tragedy is like a variety night sort of thing where people like, I have comedians, spoken word artists, storytellers, that sort of thing. Doing tragedy rather than comedy. So that's what I do. That's
well,
who I am.
I think we're a shoo-in for your next show.
We
right.
Really
it's been pretty tragic. I mean, actually, the next show's tonight, right? So you would really be a tragedy tonight.
Yeah.
You would be the perfect example. I don't expect you to even manage to sort of like move past the end of this. I think you'll just like crumble at the end of this into the floor.
No, we're finishing at 11 tonight,
right.
So it'd actually be.
Yeah, it'd clash. That's a good point.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to have to let you down.
I'm sorry. That's fine.
It's the diary's too full.
That's fine. Yeah. I don't normally make bookings live on air. Don't worry.
It's the only way we can hold you to it. That's what it comes down to.
We also do a live show that is a podcast as well.
Yeah.
So it's not quite unusual in the world of podcasting.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Isn't it?
There's a few of us around. Yeah. There definitely are.
It's good. It's good,
around.
I think.
Well, it's less editing.
Yeah, that's the...
That's why Paul likes it.
Yeah. What, for our live ones?
Yeah.
No, there's tons of editing I have
to
do.
Why is it less editing for you?
Well, for the live ones, there's less editing because we record it and then we pretty much put it out with a little bit at the beginning and a little bit at the end, but it's pretty much as is.
Yeah.
Whereas when I do my In Conversation podcast, which sounds kind of like it's completely live, I do a lot of editing. I spend a lot of time editing. I mean, there's much more time spent editing than recording, and I wish it was the other way around.
Really. Oh, God, yes. He doesn't know my pain.
I don't
he,
do, really.
He turns up on the day, does his little tramp
I
act,
just go, oh, then, his little... I just take an exception to that.
And that's how it should be.
Do I look like a homeless person to you, David?
Well, I mean, anybody can be a homeless person.
I know, but do I look... Okay,
so
yes.
I don't know. Yes, you look like a human. You look like a human, I'm afraid. So you look like
objection. Do you know what? David has pointed out the inherent bigotry in your fucking calling me a tramp. Thank you.
Well,
because anyone
thanks.
Could be. He's right.
Yeah, everyone's too...
So, right, yeah, I was playing into it. You fucking bigot. Anyone could be homeless, Paul. Right?
Yeah.
Okay?
Wow.
So I'm not a tramp. Thank you.
Well, and to this point, I'd like to talk about the money.
I think it's less that you're not a tramp and more we all potentially are tramps.
We're all one fucking
and
paycheck
so, you know,
away
there's
from the street.
Nothing
that's
wrong
what
with
they
being
say.
A tramp, I guess.
Yes, thank you, David.
But the word itself, I guess, is something we associate with humour from our childhood, so it's hard to escape those ones.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of Paul's humour is stuff that he finds hard to escape fucking childhood.
I'm already sort of like putting splinters into this podcast.
Believe me.
I guess that's been the whole process so
there's
far.
Already,
right?
There's already a plank.
Yes.
A pointy plank. You're not adding to anything, don't worry, David.
Right.
You're helping here.
Well, I mean, I always like to help. That's the problem I have, is that I'm always trying to help everybody. And when you try to help everyone, you always fuck up everything, right? You make everybody unhappy.
Yeah, that sounds
familiar.
By
trying to make everyone get on.
Yeah.
That started in my childhood, but it's pretty much my modus operandi.
Really?
Try to make everybody happy and succeed in making everybody annoyed with you.
You have to own it.
That's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's still a good motivation, isn't it, to try and help someone?
I guess so. I mean, I don't know, you know, maybe I'm just, you know... Anytime you're trying to help someone, maybe you're just trying to help yourself, right, to feel better, more comfortable. I don't like the idea of calling myself good.
Yeah, that's not going crazy.
I always get right away from that one.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that got deep there. Jesus.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid that's what I do. I do deep. But I can also do shallow as fuck, if you like.
We're literally pinballing from one to the other. Yeah.
Right.
One minute it's like, yeah, she's the... best thing ever, and then literally within a breath it's like, I might kill myself.
That's the levity. I might kill myself.
No.
You make no sense. You've gone garblegook.
But who's gonna make sense at this point? I mean, basically every word that comes out of your mouth should be forgiven to a certain extent.
Every word that comes out of my mouth should get a fucking medal. That's right. What I think.
I mean this like 27 hours of podcasting, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you won't be able to like stand by everything you say. So
they wouldn't give
like,
us the fucking world record for it, would they?
Well, that's a completely different kettle of fish.
What's that? So this is not Guinness approved.
It's not Guinness approved.
Oh dear, it's a rebel Guinness
the
attempt.
The problem is that
they are fuckers, money
that's
grabbing
your words.
Fuckers.
I have to be a bit more diplomatic.
Yeah, why?
You're right. Fuck them.
Yeah.
No, but
I mean, really,
it was complicated because when you apply for these things, there's a certain amount of time that you have to wait before they can process it.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Right.
So I initially got in touch with them when this idea first came to me in a fever dream, in about end of September, beginning of October, and I got in touch with Guinness, and they told me, you know, apply online, and I went to, and then their website was down. I said, we're not doing applications while we update the website, and I was like, oh well, I'll wait. And then a month went by, and it was like they haven't done it yet. So I called them up, and they said, yeah, it should be done by the end of November, and that didn't happen. And then it was like, okay, December. So I finally got the process and did it and all signed up, and then I got an email from them saying, we're going to, oh, it's very interesting, we're going to go along with this. And then nothing.
Oh, no.
And then to cut a long story, very long story short...
Well, you've got the time.
No. Not with this story.
You've probably done it so many times during the...
We haven't actually breached it yet tonight.
No, have you not?
No, this is all hot off the press.
Okay.
But, yeah, basically the gist was is that due to a little bit of a cock-up on their part in processing it, they left us with only... somehow left us with less than 12 weeks to do it, and yet 12 weeks is the minimum they need to get it processed. And then they turn around to me and say, well, we can speed it up, and if you pay us 500 quid, we'll get it done like that.
Whoa,
and I was like,
okay.
I asked you in October.
Yeah. Can you pay me £500 for your charity attempt? Let's just write off £500 from Comic Relief and just give it to the Guinness Book of Records.
Yeah.
Right, it's a tricky one.
So I just thought at the end of the day, because it left so close to the bone, we just thought, you know what, as much as we would like to have done that, it was far too late in the day to put it all into place.
Who needs official approval?
No
one
needs
You'll know in your heart, your listeners will know in their ears.
Will we actually have done the longest ever webcast if we are successful?
I believe so.
I mean, the question is anyone listening for that entire time? I mean, it's almost more heroic for a listener, I feel like, to listen to 27 hours.
Yeah, if anyone is listening
for you guys
to
do it, yeah.
Non-stop. And you're not my mother. Please get in touch. Because that would be nice.
Oh, well, I mean...
I hope your mum isn't listening to it.
My mum is listening, actually.
Really?
I got a text from her just this morning saying, we've been listening to you, very proud of you, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you can't be that proud if you've listened to it.
We've been going mad.
I mean, that's amazing. Because, I mean, I find the best way to get my mum not to listen to stuff is to make it long form. That's one of the biggest motivations to making a long form podcast has been my mum will not be bothered to listen to that length. So, you know, minute 45, I can say everything that I've always wanted to say.
Yeah, the first 45 minutes is all very tame, very pleasant. And then the next thing, it's like, I got beaten as a kid.
Right.
So how long is your podcast?
How long do I what?
Sorry. Do you podcast for? How long is it?
The podcast normally is around about an hour to an hour and a half, I guess.
Yeah, that's what we do, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on the conversation, you know. The conversation lasts kind of as long as it lasts.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, it's very hard to get it to go a full hour. Other times, you know, it's really hard to cut it. Short.
I find the biggest problem with editing the podcast that we do is just taking out all the to the point where I do a really good job for the first half of the edit, and then at the end I'm just like, no, don't care,
well,
no, don't care.
I don't know. I've been doing my podcast for like a few years now, and at the beginning I was obsessive about getting rid of those ums, but now I'm like, actually, a lot of those ums are quite expressive ums.
Well, it's part of speech, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly, and it gives you a lot more kind of character development to the people you're listening to, I guess.
It sounds
a weird thing to say about real people, but that's how I kind of think of it, as character development, weirdly.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, the stand-up tragedy thing.
Right.
It's stand-up, but it's not uplifting stories. It's like tragic. Is there contention between the tragedy and the entertainment of the night, or do you find there's always a nice balance between like the self-defacing kind of stuff?
I tell you what, right? If you run a night like Stand Up Tragedy, you find a lot of what people think that tragedy means, and nobody thinks it means, you know, you say, I do a night called Stand Up Tragedy, they laugh at the pun, and then they're like, oh, it's tragedy, oh, that won't be fun. But we love tragedy. Everything we like watch is tragedy. Like, EastEnders is full of tragedy. The X Factor is pure tragedy. There's this idea that we don't enjoy tragedy. We totally do, right? We
wallow in it.
And we get something from the process of looking at sad things, of watching other people go through sad things. We can learn stuff about our lives. So, first of all, I slightly kind of reject the idea of tragedy not being entertaining.
Yeah.
That said, the night will shift around between loads of different emotions. So you'll have like a comedy act making jokes about tragedy, and then you'll have somebody doing a more serious piece, and then you'll go back into some comedy, and you know, basically you'll feel all the emotions and you won't know what the fuck to think, and then at the end we have a sing-along, and that makes everything better. Catharsis.
That's where we're going wrong. We don't have a sing-along at the end of the show.
Right, well, you should have a sing-along every hour to keep you guys through.
Oh my god, I've got the ukulele just there. I told you, I'll break it out.
No more ukes, no more. We started with electric uke.
And it was rocking.
Just an update on the bus.
No one gives a shit about the buses.
Come on.
I don't care.
Fucking hell, there's a world outside.
Somebody cares about the buses. I mean, any interest, somebody somewhere cares about.
And also, Paul, can I just...
Yeah.
Paul, you care about the buses. One of your favourite conversation things is the buses. Which buses you get, what route, what, how long it takes, and also for and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but we're not doing a fucking travel programme right now, are we? Where it's like, yes, all the 263 is going to be all right.
Yes, but we're doing a fucking 27-hour fucking broadcast. We need to... Excuse me for a second,
that's
David.
All right.
We need content. Just let me say this.
Yeah.
Bus stop update.
God, it's the saddest... saddest thing.
This is like when you're thinking of ideas and you look at the ceiling and you say, oh, ceiling. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? This is basically where you're at.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Okay, bus stop update. The 393, it's coming. And our producer, who has been with us most of the night, Ewan, he's
on the bus.
He's putting his tobacco away in his pocket.
He's stopping beating
and
that lady.
Let's hope everybody that, you know, he knows that he's a smoker. It's always awkward when people out you as a smoker.
I've been outed.
I think people know.
Well, it's whether his mum knows. That's always the thing.
His mum is not listening. I mean, how is everyone's mum listening to this fucking show?
Yeah, only mums are listening to this.
Yeah. Cut to a little lady going... Oh dear! He's a smoker.
I tell you what. I mean, I'm a smoker, unfortunately, but I used to work with the under fives, right? So little kids, and there's nothing that makes you feel worse about being a smoker than a child who's been told that everybody that smokes is going to die, seeing the story man smoking outside and then like bursting into tears like the story man's gonna die, like literally they think the story man's gonna die, like that moment, do you know what I mean?
I
smoked a cigarette, I'm gonna die, there'll be no more stories, no more songs. Well, you know, it's a sad time.
I had that exact same thing with my sister when she was very young. She caught me smoking, and rather than just be like, oh, I'm telling mum, she's like, you're gonna die.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that the kind of, I'm not saying we shouldn't talk about the dangers of smoking, but when we talk about them so extremely, this connection between death and smoking, it's not really exactly true. You know, my dad's 91 and he smoked a hell of a lot, which
really?
Is not to say that I support smoking.
No. it's bad for you.
It is bad for you. But the thing is, we live in a world where we're not allowed to have excess anymore. Excess is a bad thing.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's fine. You can, you know, gluttony is bad and this kind of stuff. But it means that if I want to have this cigarette right now, which I might do and pop out and leave you two to it.
No, you're not going to do
it. If I just decided to do that right now, off the top of my head, right? I don't want to be made to feel bad about my decision to have this smoke that I rolled and go out.
Your mum knows you smoke, does she?
Oh, God, Mum, I love you. I've cut back, honestly. I'm only smoking, Mum, because I'm on the radio. Right.
You've got 27 hours to get through. How could you get through it without nicotine?
It's no longer 27.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, we're way over halfway.
Well, it's 9:20 now, so we have... When it gets to 11, we've got 12 hours left, haven't we?
Yeah. So we've got 14 hours left
ahead of us. And how many have we done? No, but think about it. Right now...
It's 27 hours. What's 27 minus 14?
13.
We're not halfway yet.
Thanks for
this
that.
This is like cut to like 5 days' time, you're still here, but you've just lost track completely of how many hours you are. You're like, surely we must be halfway now.
We've done 9 hours. No.
We've done 11 hours.
Yeah, we've done 8, and it's now
12, 13 so and a half hours.
That's good, though. That's good. We've literally done halfway then.
There's the bus.
Shut up about the bus.
I'm imagining someone at home listening to this now. This is the top quality part. That, you know,
mate.
I couldn't wait till they just started talking endlessly they halfway through and where's the bus? That's the goal.
I'm losing it, Dave.
I just got a text from my mum saying you said you'd give up.
Really?
Well, think she's listening.
There we go. That's good. I mean, that's good. We've inspired some intergenerational community.
I feel like this has all become like a Jerry Springer or something. It's just Mum.
Right. I just want to speak to Mum for a second.
Mum, it's either this or crack. So you pick. And if I get a text from my mum saying crack right now, I'll be deeply unimpressed. Where are you going?
Get me coffee.
Alright. So we're halfway through, which means basically if you can think in abstract terms, this is like starting right now and ending
at 11 tonight.
Yeah, that's not a bad... That's crap.
It's awful.
It's a crap analogy.
I feel very bad.
But let's look at it this way. We're halfway through. And think of how quickly the last section's gone.
I don't feel as tired as I thought I would.
Well, you'll go through periods of time, won't you, where you'll like feel really, really awake, and then you'll feel really, really knackered again, and then you'll feel really, really awake. If my memory serves from like doing all nighters,
yeah, I've done so many all nighters, man.
But we were younger then.
Yeah, it makes a massive difference when you've had a break for a bit.
I did all-nighters, mate. Don't you worry about my all-nighters. I rock and roll with the best of... I was up till midnight eating biscuits once at university.
Yeah.
And I drank a drink.
Oh, you drank a drink.
I drank two dogs.
That's a flashback to the 90s. Remember those days?
I had a two dogs. Well, I do remember the 90s.
Hooch. Alka Pops. Hooch, yeah. It tasted like crap.
Moscow Mule. You remember those?
Was it basically Smirnoff. Like Smirnoff Ice, but it was called Moscow Mule?
It was a Moscow Mule made by Smirnoff.
And what was it a mix of? Vodka and...
Whatever.
Fine,
tasted
good.
Crap.
I mean, you don't see Alka Pops these days, really.
You don't, really.
I mean, Smirnoff Ice... I can't remember the last time I saw
they
a Smirnoff
They do still
ice.
Sell them, but they're just not a much smaller share of the market.
WKD, that's what everyone drank
what
when
happened
I was at
to the good,
that's awful.
The good old British... Bacardi Breezer. Whatever happened to the
Breezer,
good British...
Watermelon Breezer.
I tell you what, I went off them, and not because I ever drank them. Oh, here's my mum. Drink as well, oh my God. Mother!
Is that true?
She's texting me right now. I don't drink, mother. Or I don't drink, comma, mother. The point being, I've forgotten the point, and I keep saying the point being. I've
really
noticed
does.
That. It's
he
all
said
I've
the
said.
Point being a lot tonight.
Yeah.
Right.
We should have made a tally of this, but no. Who
How
knew?
Many points would be in this during this conversation? This
so what was my point?
Endless podcast.
I don't know. The point being, you don't know what the fucking point is.
Look.
You don't want your mum to be listening if you're going to talk about all that stuff. Well, that you do.
Mother, you know I love you.
Look, this has got really weird.
Yeah, it is strange.
Mother, I love you very much, but I'm a grown man now and I must live my life. And if that involves smoking, drinking, paying for sex, mother, I'll do it. I have to do it, mother. I'm an adult now.
So, David, where can we hear your podcasts?
Well, you can hear Getting Better Acquainted at www.gettingbetteracquainted.co.uk, and you can hear Stand Up Tragedy both of them are on iTunes as
iTunes.
Well.
So you just put those
search,
words into iTunes.
But then the URL for Stand Up Tragedy is unsurprisingly standuptragedy.co.uk. It's always .co.uk because .com costs more, right?
Does it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Vastly.
I'm not au fait with the internet.
And the problem is, there are bots. Or kind of probes that live online. So if you go onto a search engine and you want to get, like, for instance, in this case, geekatorium.com, and you go on and you think, oh, that's a bit expensive, £200-300, I'll have a think. And you come back 2 days later and you go to buy it, what you'll get is someone saying, this has already been purchased, because someone has realised that that's been looked for and gone, well, and grab that it. Then. And so you call them up and say, hey.
And they go £2,000 to you. Yeah.
And it's always an American company. I called up this company. It was a British phone number diverted to America. And it was like, hi, okay, geekatorium.com. That's going to cost you £3,500. And
really?
I was like,
is it really that much?
Yeah. I was like, no, it's not. It's not. And she goes, that's just business. And I was like, no.
That's just scams.
That's just theft.
Yeah.
But they can have you over a barrel because that's how these things work.
They bought the domain.
People need that .com or .co.uk. And so I just went .net because...
Fuck you.
Who needs net?
Did you have to pay anything for net?
Well, yeah. You pay for the space and you pay for the name and you have to update it every now and then.
Right, but it wasn't £3,500?
No. I think it was £20,000?
20 quid?
No, I think it was like 20 quid, I think.
Yeah, that sounds
which
more
is,
like it.
You know, fine. And that's the thing, that they've put a value on negative space. It's like zeros and ones and that quad. Don't get me started on this, because, you know, video games you can download and stuff now, and you get charged the same or more for a video game if it was physical or digital. And I'm thinking, if it's physical... And I'm buying a disc and the booklet and the case. Fine, charge me £35-40. If I'm downloading it, don't charge me £45. There we go, I've said it.
There we go. All of the big important issues are being discussed on this podcast.
Tragedy, love, maternity.
Maternity.
No, that's when you have babies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who's been talking
motherhood.
About maternity?
Motherhood.
Motherhood.
Buses.
Mother Buzz. Well, funnily enough, the next song I'm about to play is by Jim Dale, who, if you don't know, was an actor in Carry On films and read the storybooks for Harry Potter to the Americans.
What's this got to do with buses?
Well, it's not. It's got something to do with mothers.
All right, fine.
Because the song is called Oh Mother Please. And it's taken from Jim Dale's album of original songs. So enjoy that. I love you, Mum.
Radio presents the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge, raising money for comic relief. Donate now by going to my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/Geekatorium27podcast. FUBAR and Geekatorium, doing something stupid for a very good cause.
We're back.
We are.
We're back. Yes, it's the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast. I can say this. 27-hour podcast challenge on FUBAR Radio.
Yep. And Paul is currently having a cigarette break. I'm sorry to his mother for to tell her that. Yes, so, yeah, I'm going to try and sort of do a little bit of how my show would go, I guess.
Okay,
so I guess the first question I ask everybody is how you know me, and we've got that covered. We're doing a 27-hour podcast together. The second thing I ask people is, what do you do now? So what do you do now? What would you say if you were answering that question?
What do I do now?
Yeah, when people ask you that annoying question at parties, what do you say?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hate that question.
I hate that question too, so that's why I ask people it every week.
I would say that I was an actor.
An actor.
And a DJ. And I work in a call centre.
Right, that's the day job part.
Yeah.
And that's the question, isn't it? It's always, well, do you say what you do, what you are, who you are, inside, or do you say what you do for a fucking living?
Yeah.
They are vastly different things.
Of course.
But yeah, so which of those things, I mean, like working in a call centre, I guess, that, how long have you been doing that for?
Feels like forever.
Feels like forever. I worked in a call centre briefly when I was at university, but it was the kind of call centre that was basically a horrific scam. So I sort of like had to leave it for ethical reasons in the end.
You were scamming people.
Well, yeah, it was one of those things where you rang up and you had to work out where someone was in their finances and sort of tell them that they got an award, right?
Which
award. Yeah, well, I mean, you have the script, right?
Yeah,
and
that's
the script is worded in this like way that is designed to be legally, I guess, correct, but morally wrong. You know, so you say you've won an award rather than a prize or whatever,
yeah,
and all of that stuff. And sort of, I did that for a while, and was sort of like, you know, there's only so many kind of old people you can interrupt in their lives before you just feel horrible about it. So I liked the answer phone messages when I got an answer phone message, because then I would just sing songs to them because I figured no one was listening to me really, and that always made me feel much better. I used to sing Do Something Pretty by Belle and Sebastian instead of giving them my spiel. I used to like that much more.
Wow.
But then I gave up because it was morally wrong.
You're not going to last singing down the answer phone.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, it's definitely not a way to make a living.
The producer's
handing me a message coming in.
We've got another guest coming up. Giles Taviva. Am I saying that right? Taviva?
Come through.
Okay, Giles is coming in.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, Giles.
How are you? Which side, come around here?
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Get the cans on.
There we go.
This is David.
Hello.
Hey, David. How
nice
are you?
To meet you.
He's talking about call centre work.
Yeah.
Here.
Okay.
But we don't have to talk about call centre work. That's just the direction
things
we're going.
I worked in one of those places as well. And I used to call them up and I'd go, you did a survey and you've won a bottle of wine.
Right.
You've won a bottle of wine. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put you down for 6 cases of detergent and 500 light bulbs. And people would say to me, no, you won't. You won't, Eli. You won't put me down for anything. Fucking hated that. I lasted a week.
Yeah, it's pretty soul-destroying.
Didn't sell jack shit.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to sell timeshare, which is even more,
that's even more
absurd. Yeah.
Giles is here.
Here I am. a million hours later.
Have you been next door in the Mark Watson's 27
yeah,
hour
yeah.
show?
Yeah, I've been there since the beginning, since 9 o'clock.
Really? Okay, so you're
in the same level of sleep deprivation that we've
totally.
Got over the
you're
other side.
You're a fellow traveller.
Totally, I feel your pain. I'm singing and basically playing. I've got my piano up there and my guitar.
Okay.
And I'm just basically singing and playing for 27 hours. For whoever will want to. It's a little room they've got upstairs. It's a kind of chill out area. And then every now and again I go on stage.
Oh,
well.
And entertain the people.
Brilliant.
So my voice is a little tired at this point of the day.
Okay.
Well,
you don't have to sing right now.
Oh, no,
you can have a little rest if you want.
Great. No,
I mean, we've got Paul. Paul's outside having a cigarette. And, you know, I wouldn't want him to miss the song. But,
I'm all yours, basically.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
this is great. This has really picked up. Because for a few hours, it was just me and Paul. We were losing our shit completely.
Yeah, I mean,
what time did you start?
8.
Ooh.
Last evening, 8. But an hour before you, in fact.
I mean, what did you do when it was just the two of you? Did you, like, what did
we,
you...
We spoke.
We just spoke.
We
you
spoke.
Just spoke. Just hoping that something that would... The next thing that would come out of you... You've got no notes or anything. You're just like...
We've done some preparation.
Okay.
But 27 hours worth is
27 hours is a lot to prep for.
Paul asked me to come up with some topics, and I came up with noodles and best zombie. Those are my topics. We haven't covered noodles yet. We're waiting for that one.
We're saving the big guns for the end, right? We have to save the big hot topics.
So we've got a new guest, you might have noticed, Paul.
I have. Has he been introduced formally?
Giles Taviva.
Thank you for coming along.
Torreira.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, does that look like a fucking VT?
It does. Those are ours.
I'm not some kind of idiot. Right?
We've lost all sense of
Giles
Taviva.
If I was reading that, I would say Taviva as well.
Okay,
so.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And have you been with Mark next door?
I've been with Mark next door singing and playing my guitar and singing whatever anyone wants to hear.
Oh,
but
wow.
I've been like pacing myself. You guys have been speaking straight through.
Yeah. Well,
I've been like, you know, having a little bit of a song and then a little bit of a sort of instrumental, but you've had to like talk the whole time.
Yeah, and well, it's been about as calamitous as you can imagine at times.
We've had guests.
And you've had song breaks as well, haven't you? You've played songs here and there.
And we have song breaks. So
yeah, we've had little breaks to, you know, work it. So thank you for coming in and helping us out and devoting your time and talent for us.
Pleasure, that's why we're here.
Indeed. Sometimes I do wonder. Yeah,
it's all good. Are you all right?
I've got the giggle. I am at that point now where, if I say anything, I should be awarded.
So, Giles, what are you going to play for us first?
I am going to play a song that I wrote, because the basic thing is this: we've got legal issues with playing. Basically, when I'm upstairs in my room, I can play whatever we like, so I can play your favourites from the Beatles and the Stones or soul, Motown stuff. But when we're on stage, we've got legal issues, so everything I'm doing on stage is like my own material.
Oh, okay.
Right, fair enough.
So I'm gonna sing a song that I wrote for a film that I made.
Oh, wonderful.
It's called It's All Right. And hopefully, at this time in the morning, I'll be able to see it.
Take it away.
I don't know you, you don't know me, but I'll show you the way. I can give you good times only, every night and every day. If you come crawling back to me to say you're lonely, don't come crawling back to me to say you care. Now I don't know where you're going or what you do, but it's all right. Baby, it's all right. I don't kiss you, but I miss you, and we will walk arm in arm. You don't catch me, but if you scratch me, no more rain and no more harm. If you come crawling back to me to say you're lonely, don't come crawling back to me to see you care. Now I don't know where you're going or what to do, but it's all right. Baby, it's all right. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Come crawling back to me to say you're lonely. Don't come crawling back to me to see. you care. Now I don't know where you're going or what to do, but it's alright. Baby, it's alright. I don't mind. It's alright. I don't mind. I don't mind. It's alright. It's alright.
Beautiful, man. Thank you very much.
Oh, this thank
is,
you.
This is the exact tonic we need right now.
There we go.
We need positive and love and joy.
Yeah,
and
you, not, you
and
you need regular injections of that kind of
joy. Because we're running low on the milk of human kindness. It's curdling, let's be
running
frank.
On fumes.
Yeah, man. So that was a film you wrote?
That was a film I made. It's a documentary.
Oh, tell me what. A friend of mine. This sounds pedantic, but it's true. I love the documentary format. And I think the good ones are transgressive. They're better than narrative films half the time.
Right.
So please tell me more about it.
Me and another actor. I trained as an actor, so it's me and another actor, and it's about Shakespeare. And about making Shakespeare a bit more accessible. We were quite intimidated by it at school, so we kind of went on this road trip where we spoke to lots of theatre companies and different actors and stuff about what puts people off about Shakespeare and how you can kind of make it a bit more accessible and a bit less intimidating.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a fun road movie.
And what did you find was the best in? For
see a good production.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of people, I don't know how you were introduced to Shakespeare, but we were introduced at school,
right,
sitting behind the desks, having to read it all out.
Oh, yeah.
And it kind of didn't really make any much sense. But if you go and see a good production and you see it done well, then you kind of get what it's all about.
Because that is the thing, it's getting your brain around the, I always forget this, the iambic pentameter.
Perfect.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, this is the thing, though. I mean, because I do, I'm pretty into Shakespeare, although I feel a bit weird admitting that, because everybody decides, oh, that means you're boring, right?
Right.
But Shakespeare is something that, like you say, we're taught in schools. It's really like made so boring to us. But what you're saying about iambic pentameter, I mean, like, sure, getting your head around that sounds like what you need to do. But if you read it, you don't need to know the technical stuff. You just need to read the words.
So the way I look at it is like, this is a really bad example, but I'm sleepy, so this is the best one I can come up with.
No, right.
But like, you know, like if you listen to the song One Week by Bare Naked Ladies, and they rattle through the words in that, and if you just saw it written down, you couldn't process it.
Right.
But you have to learn the rhythm. You have to establish
that
pattern.
Song. I don't know that song.
It's been 1 week, but there's a whole bit of it where it's quite rappy kind of thing. No. Hey, together and what you won't stop wing and make you look thing. I think I'm looking like Aquaman. Some of the fish because of this are like the salad. Anyway, the point being,
I'm
going to
go for a cigarette.
Yeah, thank you. The point being is that once you kind of get that into your head, you learn the song quicker. You get the lyrics. You see how it all breaks down.
Whereas if you just saw it cold, you might be intimidated by it. And I think it's the same thing with Shakespeare. If you just kind of have to sort of read it, it's a bit intimidating. But if you see it off the page and alive and an actual human being speaking it, then it can be, you know, you think, okay, I understand that.
Right, and performed by people who actually care about it as well. Like, you're reading it in class and it's just like other kids reading it. Nobody really cares about it. Nobody really knows what you're doing together. And the teacher's like imposing their opinion across all of you and not allowing you to sort of like make your own decisions.
Right.
I mean, I love Shakespeare, although I do think he could have done with a good editor. But I think, you know, that's just because at the time he was like this. He was trying to fill a long chunk of time that people would have been sat there for. And he had to like, you know, change registers, have a funny bit, have a bit where the rude mechanicals are arguing about whatever you guys were arguing about earlier on. And, you know, so, but for modern audiences, I would edit the fuck out of him, but I do, like, I studied him at university, I love him.
And did you find then that did they appreciate the classical presentation, or did they prefer the kind of like the Baz Luhrmann kind of Romeo and Juliet?
Well, that's really interesting, because we looked at the two kind of takes on it. Do you do it as traditionally as possible without any kind of big frill, so that all you get is just the words, the story and the text, and is that the way to bring people in? Or do you do what Baz Luhrmann did and we spoke to him actually in the film.
Oh, wicked.
To make it as colourful and exciting and dynamic as possible, so you draw people in that way and then you bring them to the story. And I think as long as people are passionate about it and people really respect what he was trying to do originally, as opposed to imposing some kind of concept on it, either way can work, really.
Yeah.
As long as, because there's something very pure about Shakespeare, and if you can kind of hone in on that rather than the concepts. A lot of modern things kind of have to justify why they're doing the production.
Yeah.
So now we're going to set it in Vietnam, or now we're going to set it on the moon, or whatever. Whereas And that can be kind of an imposition on top of the text, which can make it a bit more confusing because you kind of think, well, you've shoehorned stuff in. But as long as you come at it with what Shakespeare kind of originally had in mind, then either way can work, really.
Yeah, because it's like we've got right, because a modern adaptation, like Romeo and Juliet, like by Baz Luhrmann, like, he made it, he fitted it up with all of these different concepts that are modern, but they came from the text. Like,
exactly.
I think, like, yeah, that's a really good point. Like, being young, all of those things, like, weapons and all of that stuff, that's in the Shakespeare text. It's right. Just like, let's make them guns now. Let's make right. them, like, let's have that. The scene where he takes ecstasy in that scene,
yeah.
That's really what Romeo and Juliet is about, like, exactly. That kind of love. Well, like, thing, that
right.
makes total sense.
Well, that's the thing. It was very populous. I mean, we look at it now as, I think, this kind of classical text. It's unapproachable. But it was populist entertainment
right,
at the time.
Absolutely right.
And
populous.
One of my favourite lines from, you know, Bottom, the sitcom, is when there's, like, a line where someone, Richie says to Eddie, he goes, "What was it Shakespeare used to say?" And Eddie goes, "What do you mean it's crap? There are 11 bodies at the end," and he gets to shag his mum. And you think, you know, it's still, you know, tabloidy in many respects.
Right,
it's
right got absolutely that tabloidy,
thing.
Yeah.
And I think what engaged me with it was because the first text we got was Romeo and Juliet. It's never been my favourite. What really got me into it was Hamlet and Othello.
Right.
Because both of those really put you through the ringer. But at the same time, there's so many different shades of emotion all the way through. You've got the light bits, the dark bits. You've got the drama, the soap opera elements.
Yeah.
And that's what you love. You love the combustibility of where he's dragging you, especially the tragedies, because he wires those tragedies perfectly. They're taught all the way through. So.
Well, and that's one of the reasons I love tragedy. I mean, which we were talking about earlier on, like, is exactly that. Is that it does go all through all of the different emotions. It's not just, there is always funny bits in tragedy. Like, my favourite Shakespeare play is King Lear, right? That's like got the best high concepts, like, set up at the beginning. Like, right, three daughters. Which one of you loves me best? You know, you're going to get the kingdom if you prove you love to me. That's like a brilliant setup to a.
That's an
anything,
Anne Hathaway
right?
movie by large, isn't it, at this point, you know?
Right.
It is. You just got to take away the sense of snobbishness that's associated with it. In the same way, like, you know, there are bad examples of all drama and there are bad examples of all kind of art form. Like, you know, people go, opera. I love opera. Because a good tragedy to me should seem inevitable. It shouldn't be like this is the last minute they turn the screw and they screw the characters over. It has to be from the beginning. All roads lead to that ending.
Right. I mean, a really good example of tragedy that's happened just recently, I think, is like, did you see Cucumber the other day, like a couple of days ago?
No.
I heard about this episode. Right, and it starts up with the setup, like, you know, the main character is going to, like, you know.
Sorry, is this the Rusty Davis drama?
Yes, right. So, you know, like, it's the first, like, sort of shot sets up that one of the characters is going to die, and the whole way through, you know they're going to die. You know it's inevitable. You know they're going to die because you've seen at the beginning the words on the screen saying the year that they die. And you just don't, and you're like trying to work out how they're going to die, and you're seeing chances for them not, you know, every chance they take, it's so much more meaningful because you know the way the outcome's going to be.
So basically what you're saying is that drama is very, very much like the film's Final Destination.
Right.
You can't cheat death.
Yeah.
You can find a way. So do you want to play more? Do you want to? I don't know how long we've got you for, so.
I don't know. As long as, until someone comes and takes me back.
Oh, no. Please. We're loving this. So we've got 10 minutes till the hour, so if you've got a little song for us, we'd love to hear it.
What kind of songs do you like?
What? You don't want that answer.
Okay.
It'll be like, I'm not doing fucking Barbie Girl.
Right. You haven't got the rights to it.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Okay, let's do this one.
I met a gym school barroom queen in Memphis. She tried to take me upstairs for a ride. I laid there, then she covered me in roses. She blew my nose, and then she blew my mind. It's a honky tonk woman. Gimme, gimme, gimme the honky tonk blues. I let a divorcee in New York City. She tried to take me upstairs for a ride. She had to heave me right across her shoulder. I just can't seem to get her off my mind. It's so hard. Get on with me. Give me the honky tonk blues. Song with me. Give me the honky tonk blues. Oh, it's a honky tonk with me. Give me the honky tonk blues.
Oh, beautifully done.
Put a stones in the morning.
There are no rules here, there's apparently. No rules. We can do anything at all. Go. So what projects do you have coming up then? Because a man like you's always got to be on the move, right?
Speaking of Shakespeare, I'm about to do... I start rehearsals on Monday for the Globe. I'm doing a play at the Globe.
Oh, sweet.
Doing King John. Ah. Which is a kind of Shakespeare play that not a lot of people know.
I
didn't know it at all. It's like one of the least performed of his plays.
Yeah, exactly. So let me play ignorant. What is that play about?
It's about King John, the titular King John, who essentially, this year's the anniversary of the signing of Magna Carta, right?
Right.
Which again, I didn't know. I didn't know that at all. Yeah. You probably know. I didn't know that. And that was all kind of King John. So we're starting in Northampton. And then we're going to come down to London and play at the Globe. So it's kind of about him and the war that England has with France.
Agincourt.
And as always, kind of battling over those territories. All those plays seem to be about the kind of same thing, the history plays.
Right.
It's always that ongoing battle between France and England.
Although the history plays are a weird thing, though, because he was writing all of them for the approval of Queen Elizabeth, right?
Right.
So they're history told in the way that Queen Elizabeth would like.
Yeah, but it's okay by her.
Right.
You
get
the impression that if Shakespeare was alive today, he'd be writing the screenplay for Risk the movie. You can see him being drafted in. You're very good at soliloquies, mate. So a few asides for Tom Hanks over there.
He can always do that, though. He can kind of balance.
Right.
He can kind of please.
Yeah, he
you
did
get the feeling that he can come please Her Majesty or His Majesty.
But also the people in the seats.
Right.
And like that's what he did very, very well, wasn't it? He would make it so that overall it pleased like authority, but within it was all of this radical stuff that people could take out if they wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is really tough because, I mean, I don't know that much about Elizabethan drama, but a lot of them were always being chucked in prison for treason or whatever. They had to be very careful about what they said. And yet he was able to get away with... I think it's because he's quite ambiguous about some of his stuff.
Right.
You can kind of look at it from either way, which is quite clever.
He was the... Yeah, I mean... Because I don't know the play. Does it fall into tragedy? Is it just historical?
It's a history.
Yeah.
It's regarded as a history. He dies, so it is a tragedy, I suppose.
My guess, yeah.
But I think that he's the first... Excuse me. I think he's the first monarch, like in terms of the year that it takes place.
Right. So in terms of the history plays, he's the first one, and then the rest come.
Because there's always the Henrys. And Richard II, Richard the First. I think King John is the first. I might be wrong about that, but
he's the King of Kings. You could argue.
Yeah.
It's either him or Elvis. I always get a bit muddy on those. Always can't quite figure it out. Well, that's cool. So do you find that being at the Globe gives it that little bit more? Oh, this is Shakespeare. It's like to be breathing in that environment, performing in that environment.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the first time I went there, I was like, I'd love to perform there because it's not like any theatre in town, really. It's got, that open roof and the pigeons come down and fly in and land on the stage, and there's like the planes go over, and it's that's part of it. The building is part of it itself. The space is part of the performance. Yeah. So I've always wanted to act there, and I haven't done. I've been acting for like 15 years, and I've never performed there. So I'm really excited about it.
That sounds pretty cool, though, man. This kind of stuff always excites me, though, because it's like I can live vicariously for the success of others. It's like, oh, I'm going to love performing at the Globe. No, Paul, you're not doing that. Someone else. It's like, oh.
But
yeah,
you're going to come, and you know, you come to see it.
Oh, don't tempt me. If I had the money, I would see everything. The first thing I saw at the Globe, I think, was Revenge's Tragedy, which is. That's a baptism to just see that, because it's the Jack. Is it the Jacobean tragedies? What are they called? I can never remember the phrase for that genre. But yeah, I just remember thinking this is a bit racy, and then you watch EastEnders, you think no, it's not that racy at all. It's right, actually it. Apart from a little bit more blood, and maybe Eddie Izzard turns up in the movie version. It's all it's very transferable.
Right, the stuff we like now is pretty much the stuff we've always liked. It's just we just tell ourselves that the stuff back then, like people then were more extreme or less extreme, you know. But people like the same stuff. We're just allowed to see different things depending on who's in charge.
Yeah, we do. It is funny that we're like, I can't believe people like Jerry Springer have a TV show. And then you go, well, wait, we were throwing people to the lions there a thousand years ago. We like the underbelly of society. Yeah. We like to, if not identify with it, we like to see ourselves above it.
Right.
And those, I think that kind of is the appeal for those kind of. But again, with tragedy, with me, I don't know why I'm getting so worked up on tragedy at the moment, but I've always found that, yeah, a good one is beautiful to just experience and go through. So
Jerry Springer's a good example, I think, in terms of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Hamlet.
Well, Shakespeare.
My brother wants to fuck my sister. My son wants to kill his uncle. It's like, that's kind of what it's all about.
You can almost see the little bar at the bottom of the screen coming up saying DNA test. Going on.
This is what I spend all the time. So you weren't here when I was talking about what I do, but I run a night called Stand Up Tragedy, right, where people stand up and do tragedy rather than comedy. And I spend my whole life trying to convince people, you do like tragedy. You just don't know you do.
Right.
That's a useful reference point for definite Jerry Springer for all of that stuff.
Where do you go all over? Where does it happen?
We do it in London, but we're doing it in the Edinburgh Festival again this year. We've done it the last couple of years as well. But we're doing it in the Hackney Attic in Hackney, obviously. In fact, the next one's tonight. We're doing Tragic Winter, so we're looking at all of the tragedies which happen at this kind of time of the year. Although I've been a bit worried that the sun's coming out and it's going to ruin my show. I'd be like, fuck, just be worse weather for longer. Just be a bit worse.
The worse weather will come back.
You'll be all right. It's a little bit nice.
It's not so nice today, so I'm pleased.
I just stuck my head out and it's fucking grim.
Right,
I'm going to do a little bit of admin before we get into 10 o'clock. So, yes, we're not doing this for the good of our health. Everyone's giving their time and talent to raise money for Comic Relief. So, if you can, please do reach into your pocket, pull out your credit or bank card and give a little bit of money to my.rednoseday.com/sponsor. /Geekatorium27podcast, or if that's too complicated for you to remember, go to geekatorium.net or foobarradio.com, and all the links you need are there to donate. You got no excuse. You really don't. Don't make me force you. And on that note, let's continue the happy theme with a song I like. This one.
Foobar Radio presents the Geekatorium 27-hour podcast challenge, raising money for Comic Relief. Donate now by going to my.rednoseday.com/sponsor/Geekatorium27podcast. Foobar and Geekatorium, doing something stupid for a very good cause.